This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over Redline. Not the 2006 one, not the 1997 one, the 2007 one.
Yeah.
Is that right?
2007, yeah. Baby. There's multiple.
There's lots of them out there. And you landed on this one, and I am so sorry about that. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
You're not ready.
For One Dry Kiss. Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where in the month of May, we do one movie that may make you say, what the ever-living fuck? Bleep, 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 bleep,
bleep, bleep, bleep. Normally it was what the fuck, but you added all those extra adjectives in there, and rightly so, Corinne.
Well, you know, here's the thing. This movie is a masterpiece, and...
I'm going to beg to differ just a wee bit there.
It was my pleasure to share it with you for the first time.
It wasn't my pleasure to watch it for the first time. I do have to say that. Right. I was like, is this another Adam's rib? She liked it so much when I was tortured by a movie that she decided to add to it.
I do genuinely enjoy this terrible, terrible, terrible movie. And story time.
Oh, first we got to introduce ourselves because I went off on a tangent talking shit about your movie. I'm so sorry.
I'm going to say, and I am here with my lovely co-host who makes my motor hit the red line, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Oh, shit. That's good. I don't know how to counter that. And I am here with Corinne Vroom 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 Eddie, my co-host.
I love that. It's my new nickname, Vroom Vroom Vroom.
It's because you put Vroom 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 like in 18 different parts of this script.
Well, that's because there's a lot of rooming in the script. I don't know if you noticed. Tamara asked me, she's like, I can't figure out who the star of this movie is. And ultimately, I settled on it's the cars.
So first, I said, I watched this whole thing and could not figure out who the star of the movie was. And then you said, of course, it's the narrator, Nat. And I'm like, does the movie know that?
Which is a brilliant line that you said. Yes.
And then you said, no, I think it's the cars, actually. And I was like, I think that's more accurate.
So, gentle listeners, I have a two-part sharing around this movie, which is the joy of my heart. When I was with Chloe, we went to see this movie in the theater. And
you're kidding.
I am not. And so we saw about three quarters of the movie. Uh-huh. And then we ended up getting ushered out of the movie theater because a car had blown up in the parking garage that was right next to the movie theater. So we had to evacuate.
Shut your mouth.
How very thematic, right?
I know.
And Chloe also informed me before we saw this genius movie that the person who instigated this movie, he really wanted a movie where he could show off his car collection. And that is why this movie was created.
I did see that in some of the critiques. Some of the less than friendly critiques.
There's critiques of this movie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got a couple of them.
What?
That's my synopsis, just all the bad critiques of this movie. I'm just kidding.
Gentle listeners, I have been going through a hard time recently. There's been a lot of stuff going on. And so another two-parter. One, been looking for things that add a little joy to my life. Spending time with Tamara, obviously, is one of them. Two, would be watching America's Ugliest Houses on Max. Really been enjoying that. Laughed my ass off as I was watching the Cocaine House with its many... They didn't call it the Cocaine House, but they should have called it the Cocaine House. They hinted at it. They called it like the Crystal Party Palace or something like that.
Ah.
Yeah. Crystal dot
real,
dot dot.
Well, Subtle.
Yes.
Subtle.
So I've been enjoying that. However.
Crystal Party? Oh, I mean, oh, the house, the not house. Crystal. Okay,
No.
Sorry, my misunderstanding.
Sorry, I'm a drug-free babe except for my antidepressants, but. We're coming up on the anniversary of my sister's death, so May is a hard month for me because she died June 1. And May is a great month because we started our podcast in May as well.
Banger timing. Yay.
My sister got to enjoy the podcast for an entire month before she died. Yay.
And we hadn't even hit our stride yet.
I know.
If you could see us now, Bridget.
Seriously. Also, I have a relative who is in hospice care. And so I'm on a bit of a struggle bus right now. So while we were planning on doing 4 movies in the month of May, we are taking an Emotional Health Tuesday before we go on break for our podcast, which we're actually taking our regular June, and then we're taking our We Need to Get Our Shit Together July in there as well.
You are so lucky that you're ending it on this movie, because I was going to make you pay with the next one.
Ooh.
I was going to make you pay because this one, it was something. It was up there with Adam's rib, gentle listeners.
What? Was it making you go to sleep?
No. It wasn't the sleepy time one, because there was too much vrooming
yes.
throughout. So.
Very exciting.
Yes. Lots of vibrations. But it was just really bad. Really bad. So I was like, when I read your outline, I was like, oh, okay, so that is what happened. I thought I blinked or looked down, and then they were like in a whole new situation. And I'm like, who's that? Who's this guy? Why do we care about him? So it was like a bunch of that. And then I realized, oh no, that's just the movie.
Tamara sent me a text last night, and it had me laughing until my sides and my back hurt, and I almost peed myself. So thank you for that, Tamara. She said,
no problem.
What? Question mark. The? Question mark. Heck? Question mark. Did? Question mark. I? Question mark. Just? Question mark. Watch? Question mark. The finest movie of all time, basically.
According to Corinne, gentle listeners. So if you like smutty car movies that have weak plots and lots of TNA, you're in for a treat.
This movie's so bad. It's so bad.
Wait, how long when you and Chloe watched it the first time, how long did it take for you to actually see the ending?
Well, you know, I actually own my own DVD copy of Redline.
Oh, you shut the fuck up. Oh, shut right. Okay, that makes so much sense. You're like, it's free. We're picking this one.
You can watch it for free on Prime, which I think that Tamara was probably inspired to buy it after she...
I would have been so mad if I had to pay for this movie. I would have been so mad at you. Even if I had to rent it for $1.99, I would have been like, you owe me $1.99. For forcing Redline upon me.
Oh, it's so good.
You keep saying that and you're still not convincing me.
So how are things going in your world, Tam?
Oh, I told you today that I discovered a new show called Shrill that
yes.
I absolutely fell in love with.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like a gradual slope of love. Like at first I was like, oh, this is okay, you know, oh, it's got interesting characters, oh, mm-hmm. And then I like second season I really started falling in love with it. And then I found out the second season was the last season. I was like, son of a...
That's so funny, because I was like, all right, I'm enjoying this, and then the last episode of the first season, I was like, oh my god, this is so stupid, fuck this show. And I like just stopped. I was like, there will not be a season 2 for me.
But in case you haven't noticed, gentle listeners, our tastes vary very dramatically. So I just had to send Corinne a screenshot, because I was watching an episode of Shrill while I was on my lunch break, and the main character was going to a booty call, and she was completely drunk off her asses. But of course, all her friends were encouraging her to go. Guys love drunk girls, and you know, and you like him, and whatever, who cares? Whatever happens, happens. And then they christened her with some road tater tots that they put right in between her tatas. So she was trying to chug water to sober up, and they were putting tater tots betwixt her titties.
Tatas.
And I was like, I love this. I have to take a picture and send it to Corinne.
And little did she know, I had recently had a food being held almost between the tatas moment, just mere minutes before she sent me that picture. So,
oh, that's right.
Yeah.
You were having a lunch with your boss, man,
yes.
And you just threw some leftovers down your shirt. That was kismet.
Yes. I was like, oh, things that I don't want to do in front of my boss, man. Wiping myself vigorously in my chest area to get rid of food.
Yeah. That's what you said. You're like, well, I had something down my shirt and it sure as hell wasn't tater tots. And I'm like, oh, and you're the lesser woman for it.
I wish it was tater tots. That would have been a lot easier to clean up and an excellent snack.
To keep for later.
Yeah.
And they'd be nice and warm if you just keep them there in the tatas, like a little warmer box.
Just nestle them in there. First, you put a little dip in between and then. And
No. Waving my hand. Waving it. It can tell us so much that we need a vacation right now. We're talking about dips and snacks and the cleavage. Oh. It's time to go.
Speaking of time to go. Boop, 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 boop. I'm a sexy lady, and I'm throwing my shirt up into the air. Hey! Do you have a synopsis for us, Tam?
You wrote, Tamara, please explain the what the fuckery of this movie. And the first line I wrote was, I can't! With about a dozen A's. Then I'm like, okay, I can't just leave it at that. All right, red line, red line, red line. What is it in a nutshell? It is a poor man's Fast and Furious. And I'm like, no, that's also not going to work. Okay. My synopsis is it's like if a bad 80s cartoon was made into a movie about racing, like Jem meets G.I. Joe meets Speed Racer, even though the Speed Racer is from the 60s. And then I'm like, okay, I can't keep talking shit about it, but I don't have the stamina to actually like try to synopsize what happened. So I just copied the one from Rotten Tomatoes so you can get what the director and producers were trying to go for.
Ooh, I'm intrigued.
A beautiful auto mechanic and aspiring singer, Natasha, gets a gig legally racing flashing sports cars for wealthy music producer Infamous, who bets big money on street races with his millionaire friends, Jerry and Michael. However, the already dangerous contests spiral out of control when Michael decides to do whatever it takes to get Natasha racing for him. Even if it means kidnapping her.
That's really not an accurate synopsis at all, but
that's
okay.
Like 25% true, but you see why I wasn't trying to encompass it, because I'm like, I'd have to get the corkboard and the red string and like three additional walls to try to make this movie make sense. And I just didn't have it in me. So I'm like, I'm just going to let Rotten Tomatoes tell me what to say. But then I also did include as a nice little exclamation mark on the end of it, somebody's critique of Redline, which incidentally has 2 stars on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
And they said, one of the worst movies of all time.
Yeah.
... I've seen it 5 times already.
Yes. See,
that's correct. That's correct.
I was like, they gave it 2 stars. I was surprised.
... I own it.
Yeah. I have 2 favorite really bad movies. One of them is this movie, Redline. The other is actually a more finely crafted movie, DOA, which is based on a video game. But look, I will show you.
Oh, Jesus. Yep. I've seen that cover. I saw that cover on Prime.
I'm just reading the back synopsis and to see what it says. Yeah, it doesn't say anything. It's a lot of word salad.
Yeah, exactly. Like this movie, word salad.
Yes.
Car salad with some people sprinkled in.
Yes, absolutely.
As seasoning. That's what I should have put as the synopsis. Car salad with some people sprinkled in.
Totally. Yeah, and I did not bother to name a single car type in this movie because I was just like, you know what? No, this movie does not deserve to have all the stinking, stupid-ass million-dollar cars in it named. If you want to see what the cars are, you can watch the movie.
Oh, no. You tried to gracefully, like, push it off on me. You're like, yeah, I'm not naming shit. But if you want to, if you want to go down a rabbit hole and figure out the names of the cars, and I was like, I do not.
Which
I do not.
I was not trying to push it off on you. I was just saying, like, because I wrote vroom vrooms instead of cars most of the time. So I was just like, if Tam decided that she had wanted to insert in, oh, this is a blah, 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 I wouldn't have been like, but you're ruining my perfect script.
That's why I said you have vroom vrooms on here 15 times. Yes. That was me blowing a raspberry, gentle listeners, not me farting. That's why I was laughing about it. Because you're like, the vroom vrooms.
Yeah,
I was like, vroom vrooms is good enough.
I say vroom or roomy 38 times in the script, just FYI.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. I was wrong. Well, it's 38 times, but you say it in succession.
Yes.
So it's like room, room.
Yeah.
Room, room, room. Room, roomies, room. Room, room, roomies, room, 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 roomies, room, room, roomies, room, room, roomies.
Maybe you have like a new song for Natasha to sing in her car themed band that she's in.
Oh. You know, that must have been the inspiration for my grab bag question and answer, because I picked one at the end as an alternate movie title that kind of fits what you just said. So I think I'm going to have to pick that one now, and I'm very excited. All right, Corinne, now that we have completely like put everybody on the edge of their seat about listening to this outline of this banger movie, Redline, do you want to get us started?
Oh, I'm ready to start my engine.
Oh, broom, broom.
That's more like the van that your dad drove.
Exactly. Yes. In the Maserati of life. Uh-huh. This movie is a...
Downtown Los Angeles, 9:35. Not 9:30. Not 9:38. 9:35, okay? Get it right. We hear a woman's voice narrate. There are some people who have... Okay, and isn't the acting in this epic? Like...
Oh, God. I was not even going to get into it because the movie was so epically bad just altogether that the acting was just like... expected. I expected the acting to be what it was.
It was like porn acting, but... without sex.
With the car porn instead of like people porn.
Yeah. Although I will say that The woman who plays Natasha is the best actor in the entire movie, and she does a good job.
She does an okay job.
I'm not saying she's getting an Oscar, but for the movie that she was in, she stands out above the rest of
them. I know. Because everybody else was so bad. That is not a compliment. You can't say you're the worst evil dictator just because everybody else is worse than you. Just like she just looked good because everybody around her was really, really bad.
You mean you're the best evil dictator because everyone else is like... Anyways, yes. Okay. So... we hear a woman's voice narrate, there are some people who have cars that get you from point A to B. And then there are some cars that get you from point A to point B really, really fast.
Wow. Banger writing.
Uh-huh. I know. Right? The camera pans through the city to an open garage where there are Bentleys and Camaros. Okay, I did name like a couple of cars initially.
And then you quit.
I quit. Quite fast. Bentleys and Camaros and fast, and maybe even furious cars. We see men hanging out next to their cars because the Camaros and the Bentleys are not racing. I will tell you that right now.
Oh.
They aren't the roomy rooms. No. They're just...
always wondering what they were doing there.
I know. They're just sitting there to like be like, look, I have an expensive car.
Hmm. They're the babe magnets.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many babes in this movie, inexplicably around these really not attractive at all men.
Yes. And these women are super skinny, which is of the time.
Yes.
But like almost every single one of them has ginormous tatas.
Yes. Prerequisite. Yeah.
It looks like they haven't eaten in months, but what they have eaten has gone straight to their chest.
You know? We all have our hopes and dreams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I want to gain weight, that would be like the ideal place. So, I mean, I'm a little jealous.
Being a skeleton with boobs. We see men hanging out next to their cars while scantily clad women surround them. The woman's voice continues. Fast cars mean a lot of money. And with millions of dollars at stake, there are people who will do anything to win. And here I thought the fast cars meant that they got from point A to point B really, really fast.
Mm.
Oh, I'm so silly. What was I thinking?
Silly girl.
We see the music mogul, Infamous, whose name I do not remember at all, and I kept on having to look him up, and sometimes I just put down words that were kind of close. Played by Eddie Griffin, who can't resist a high-stakes bet. So all of the characters in this movie have their tagline, which is really special, right?
That's why I was like, wait, who's this about? The narrator? Okay, she shows up at like 5 minutes and 18 seconds in after we get all these people with their little like titles. So then I thought these generally had like equal playing parts in this movie. They do not.
No.
They do not.
No. No. Michael, the eccentric. Using the term eccentric for him is really gracious. Who plays by his own rules? And you will find out how much he plays by his own rules as this movie unfolds. I'm sure Tamara was thrilled to see this unfolding.
Well, I think Michael is probably the best actor in the movie. I enjoyed Michael's acting. I didn't enjoy Michael per se, but I enjoyed his acting.
He's been in a lot of legit good things in his life.
I think he was in Braveheart.
And he needed to pay the rent in this job. So good on you, Michael.
Ah.
And to delight me. Yeah, he was in one of those like Braveheart or one of those fighty fight movies.
Robert the Bruce from Braveheart.
Ooh, I've never seen Braveheart, so, you know.
Oh, well, you're missing out. I think that's the movie I'm going to have to do this punishment
Great.
For this one.
Great. Forgetting in country! There.
Freedom!
I've just reenacted the entirety of Braveheart right there. Minus probably like a softly lit sex scene for some bad reason.
Oh, really? Okay. Bets, babes, broom, vroom. Somebody dies. Bets, babes, broom, vroom. There, I've completely like synopsized this whole movie. There, now
that's
we don't have to do it anymore.
That's what you should have done for your synopsis. What are you talking about? That's perfection. Michael is in his 40s, a bit thick around the middle, has a flop of curly brown hair and a scruffy beard. Jason, the dreamer. He's not sure where he's going, but he wants to get there. Fast. Me too, Jason. Me too. I'm a dreamer and I want to get there fast. Jason looks like a Ken doll who smokes. So sexy. Picture James Vanderbeek with a squarer jaw and lots of foundation on.
Oh, yes. I thought the same thing.
Apparently, all of these guys share a cell phone where they're placing a bet. And Michael says over the phone to the mystery person, I will bet $500,000 that my driver, because why would he drive the fast car himself, gets there in 2 hours.
And swish, we see the Las Vegas skyline. It's 9:37 p.m., so 2 whole minutes have passed. And we hear a smarmy voice say, that's already been done. How about $1,000,000 from L.A. to Mike's penthouse in 1 hour and 45 minutes? Can it be done? The suspense is killing me. And we see Jerry, whose title is The Producer, who is in a burgundy... Oh, my God. Your typos in this were so hilarious that I just left them. Jerry, the producer, who is a burgundy leather high-back office chair.
He's kind of is.
Office chair. In his Vegas office with its wooded paneled walls. He's wearing a bathroom and no pants.
That was auto-corrected. Me leaving out the word in was not auto-corrected, but bathroom instead of bathroom was auto-corrected. I will tell you that. That's awesome.
So picture a burgundy leather chair in a bathroom with no pants. Oh. Okay. He is in a burgundy leather high-back chair, and he's wearing a bathrobe and no pants. Definitely no pants. And don't you worry, gentle listeners. He's also got a couple of sexy ladies in his office because there's not enough in this movie. Not enough. He is the voice on the other side of the phone. Michael agrees. And back in L.A., the music mogul. His title is infamous. Bets the eccentric Michael $1,000 that he won't make it. And now we find that Jason, the dreamer, is Michael's driver. And he is appalled to learn that he needs to do the 4-hour trip from L.A. to Vegas in 1 hour and 45 minutes. But quickly throws down his cigarette, dashes to his sporty car, and speeds off. As Jason the Dreamer races out of town, he speeds by a hapless motorcycle cop who has given a guy a ticket. Jason is going so damn fast that the wind he creates spins the cop around and knocks over his motorcycle. Wow, how sexy and fast and, dare I say it, furious.
Oh.
As the red light on his sports car moves up to 200 miles an hour, he hits a deserted road. He turns off his lights and puts on his night vision scope so he can see the road. But the cop who's sitting in a car reading his magazine can't see him. The cop's radar goes off at 200 miles per hour.
What?
And the cop looks around but sees nothing because the dreamer's lights are off. He's completely invisible. Oh, darn that faulty radar machine. For some reason. Oh, wait. Before we go into this next scene that makes absolutely no sense, I just have something to say about the roads in this movie. They are all completely deserted, and I can't stand it because even unless he's going down some dark desert road that nobody knows about, like the trip from LA to Vegas is constantly congested, and you will at least see a million cars, if not more.
Yes.
And the fact that he's alone on this deserted road, just like whipping through nothing, I'm like, bullshit. Same thing in LA. It was very infuriating. Anyways, I digress.
But was it also fast?
It was fast and infuriating. That's the name of this movie. The name of this movie. Not fast and furious, fast and infuriating. For some reason, the driving scene is cut with two women slow motion sexy pillow fighting. Then we found out why, as Jason with the dreams runs up to a penthouse just in the nick of time and throws a pill bottle of Viagra at a very happy Jerry the producer, who is being massaged by one sexy woman and watching the other two slow motion pillow fight each other. Corinne writes, Tamara's dream come true. I left that in because I'm dying to know why. And Jerry says smugly, $1 million for this? Then he eyes the slow motion pillow fighting ladies and says, totally worth it. And I know what Tamara's thinking. Why didn't he just get some Viagra from Vegas? It's not like Vegas is lacking in drugs. Well, I got a couple of very convincing arguments for her. And please shoot, Corinne, because I am all ears.
Shit. I had a couple of very convincing arguments for you, but I didn't put it in the script because I didn't want to ruin the arguments. And now I may have ruined it for myself. I don't know if they're in my mind anymore. I will say that I wrote Viagra, but actually, the bottle says like Pie-Agra or something like that because Viagra's
Hand-Agra
a
or something.
Because Viagra's a brand name, and they were like, we can't use that. So they put different letter in there instead of a V. But one, I will say that it's the thrill of the bet, and so that's part of the whole thing. You know, you have to have your time to do your cocaine and get really amped up. Well, you're waiting to see if the guy can come in at an hour 45 so you can pay $1 million for your Piagra.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Which I was hoping for something better.
The ladies, I actually had better reasons and I can't remember them.
I figured you did.
Yeah. The ladies, they're like, ooh, that's so sexy that he bet money so he could get Piagra delivered to him. Now I really want to bone him.
Yeah. All right.
Uh-huh. Yes. So, sorry, gentle listeners and Tamara, I forgot my reasons. It's the next.
I was like, oh, she's going to lay it on me. I'm going to say this and I'm going to look at her and be like, Corinne, you're going to be like, oh my God, here it is. Okay, A. And then spit silly stuff out. B.
I
spit silly stuff
out. Totally forgot that I had written that.
And hence the reason for us taking an early vacation.
Oh my gosh. It's the next day. No precise time. No precise location. Other than the Greyhound bus terminal somewhere in California. And we see a guy dressed in his Dress Armed Forces uniform because that's obviously the most comfortable way to travel on the bus. Mm-hmm, sure. And we're introduced to Carlo, the war hero. He fights for what he believes in. And he's played by the brown-haired cutie Nathan Phillips, who I best know from the Australian TV series The Saddle Club, which mainly centers around a trio of teenage girls who love horses. He plays a hunky guy who works in the stables. But currently, he's playing a guy waiting to get picked up from the Greyhound bus station. And now Tamara's really dying to watch the Saddle Club, I'm sure. the Saddle Club movies.
I would rather over this.
That's what you think. I mean, I do really delight in them, but they're really bad too.
Oh, and you delight in this movie. So now I'm like taking your opinion with a grain of salt. You're like, they're delightful for me. And I'm like, oh, that means they're trouble for me.
Yeah, no, no, you would hate them. However, there are no sexy ladies in there. So, you know, it may have a boost from that. But yes.
Only sexy horses.
And then we cut to an auto shop conveniently situated next to a racetrack. And we finally get to meet our narrator as she walks into the auto shop office and says, "And that's me, the girl next door." See, this is Natasha, the girl next door, as opposed to Carlo, the war hero.
18 seconds in, yeah, everybody else that was less important in the movie got their titles and their situations before Nat, which is why I was like, so who's this about? Oh, her?
Well, that's because they're men, Tamara. That's why.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, that makes me like it all the more.
Uh-huh. Yeah. This is a feminist treatise. So her name is Natasha, in case you're wondering. She is more than just the girl next door. She's played by Nadia Bjorlin, who looks like a young Yasmin Bleeth.
Mm-hmm.
Natasha leaves for band practice just as Infamous pulls up to the garage in his Bentley. He gets out of the car with his entourage and one of his lackeys says, "Where was the script supervisor in this movie? Because there's just lines that go to no sense in this movie." He says, "I swear, if you paid $200K, this dude Nat will hook you up." But what they don't know is that Nat is a woman, not a dude, and she's at band practice the next garage over, singing race car-themed songs, as one is wont to do.
See, hence my gem cartoon turned into a movie motif. Yeah. That's where this comes in. Yeah. His gem always had like themed music to go with the episode. Huh?
Yeah. Nat is truly outrageous. Truly, truly, truly outrageous. Oh. Nat starts singing the banger "Needle to the Red Line." And she magically has three voices instead of one because she's cool like that. She spits out such compelling lyrics like, "Look into my eyes like Biggie, you've got me eclipsized."
Wow, that is deep.
"You've got time, I've got time, rev your engine and I'll rev mine." Lyrical gold.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Infamous, hearing her siren song the next garage over, walks with his entourage to Nat's band practice and lets her know, "You got a beautiful voice there, girl. You're looking good. You got that look like money." He gives her the sexy eyebrow look, but she's all business. She knows exactly who he is and brings him over to the car that she's tricked out for him. She doesn't charge him $200K, though, only $3,000. However, even though previously they'd been talking about $200K for working on the car or whatever, he balks at the $3,000 price, and I was like, but I thought that was a good deal in comparison to okay, never mind. I'm confused.
Don't even question it. Don't even just let it gloss over you. Let it reverberate through you like an engine and just go with it.
I thought he'd be grateful for the $3K price. He demands to talk to the boss man, Nat, not just the pretty girl who's showing him the car. She raises an eyebrow at him and explains that she's Nat. And if he wants his tricked out car, it's going to be $3K. She should have started raising the price on him.
Mm-hmm.
He asks her if she can show him what it'll do. And bam, they are magically over at the racetrack that the garage is directly next to. As Nat savvily goes around the track with Infamous in the passenger seat, he's practically wetting himself in fear. But then, wetting himself in excitement, vroom, vroom, after they've gotten off the track, he begs her, "I need your help." He wants her to drive for him, but she turns him the fuck down. So he goes for the second best thing, ? Asking her and her band to play for his friends while they watch the race. Be their entertainment. Yay, they have a gig. Natasha says she'll think about it.
I just remembered one part of that previous scene that you so lovingly shared with us. Mm-hmm. Like, Infamous is like, you guys rock. And I'm like, no, they don't. I don't know if that's what he said, but whatever he said, they weren't doing. And I was very confused by it.
The song was supposed to be sexy and it was just really bad.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like this movie. Anyways. And now we're back at the Greyhound station, which I am happy to report is in LA because you can see the Capitol Records building in the background.
Mm. Thank you, Tamara. LA guide extraordinaire.
No problem. Very iconic, easy to recognize. And there is not any Greyhound station anywhere near it. So I was like, you're at the cafe that serves the best coffee in town, which isn't the best coffee in town. That's about where they were situated. Anyways, Jason the Dreamer pulls up in his red vroom vroom car. And of course, he's there to pick up Carlo, the war hero. But before he has a chance to show Carlo his amazing outfit of white pants, a thick turquoise colored belt, white polo shirt with pink and white argyle on the bottom two-thirds of it, and a brown sports jacket with his blonde hair gelled for Jesus. He also very much looked like a Jersey Shore wannabe, and I'm like, oh, that's of the time. That's of the time, because I think this was like in 2007 and Jersey Shore was like 2 years later.
Jason the Dreamer's clothing was so confusing.
The understatement of the decade. A orange vroom vroom car pulls up behind him and a guy pops out of his car, sportily wearing an open dark blue button-down shirt, pants, definitely pants, and wearing his baseball cap backwards and swaggering up to Jason the Dreamer. Smiling like a wolf, he says, "Who bought you that car, your boyfriend?" Jason is pissed because, oh no, being called gay is so terrible. And they're about to get in a fight when the guy reveals a gun in his waistband and demands, "I want your vroom vroom car." I don't think he says that verbatim, but we'll just go with Corinne's narration. "I want your vroom vroom car." Just then, the bottle of Dasani water that the war hero had been drinking flies through the air and hits the baseball cap guy on the head. And a fight breaks out with lots of kicking, punching, and wrestling between Jason Carlo and baseball cap guy with two of his friends. All hell breaks loose! Jason grabs baseball cap's gun, and Carlo and Jason jump into Jason's vroom vroom and drive off. At first, they're exhilarated from the fight, but then Carlo puts his war hero situational awareness into action and realizes that they're in a ridiculous car and accuses, "Is this Uncle Michael's car?"
Ooh.
And that's when we realize that Carlo, Jason, and Michael, the curly-haired asshole, are all related. Jason assures him, "Yeah, it's his car, but I'm not involved in the family business." Carlo declares woodenly and passionately, I'm gonna see if I could do this line justice. I don't know how to do wooden and passionately. "We may be related to Michael, but he's not family. He's a crook, okay? He destroyed our family. Why can't you see that? Why are you so stupid?" Then Carlo puts on his Aunt Mildred glasses. That's what I called them, because they were stunner shades of the time.
Oh God, they were the worst.
They can only now be found on aunts named Mildred.
Oh. It's like when you go to get your eyes dilated and they give you like the big extra shades to put over. That's like what he's wearing, basically.
Yes. And he puts them on like he's serious. He's like, "Oh, God damn it. You're stupid, man." Aunt Mildred glasses. I was like, is that how you punctuate the conversation? Okay. We briefly change scenes to Nat's neck of the woods, and we find out that she, 1, lives in an Airstream trailer, 2, her dad died in a terrible car racing accident, 3, she accepted the invitation to sing with her race car themed band in Vegas, and 4, that she was traumatized by her dad's accident, and that's why she doesn't race, but her mom fully supports her racing if she wants to.
Yes. I think her mom is the secret star of this movie.
She reminds me of somebody, the blonde lady from Designing Women.
Oh, yeah. No, she is kind of like her. You've probably seen her in some Hallmark movies, but...
That's probably it.
Barbara Niven. It plays the mom. And you're thinking about Jean Smart, and she does look kind of like her. And the mom in this movie has quintessential early 2000s hair.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
It's the Karen-do that spurred all the Karen-dos. Mm. It used to be cool.
Yes.
And in style. And then it winds up most of the people that had that hairstyle did bad things and that monikered the Karen.
Yeah, except for Nat's mom, Sally, in this movie. She actually has some shining moments of glory, including actually not being a lame trope and being like, don't get behind that race car, honey. You know that's how your dad died. Instead, she's like, you know, you should think about getting behind the wheel of a car.
Uh-huh.
That's what she's like. Go, Mom. Oh, and Sally, her boyfriend, and Nat, I believe, all live in the Airstream trailer together.
Mm. Is that guy Sally's boyfriend?
Boyfriend or husband?
Larry? His name was Larry. His name was Larry. That's the only thing. I'm like, really? He's a goober and his name's Larry.
He is a goober. My next section I entitled Feminism Redline Style.
No, not at all. Oh my God.
Next, we see a street race of three vroom vroom cars. What type of vroom vrooms? Well, first, there's the blue stripey. Second, a black. And third is red. So many different makes and models of cars. Image or Mirage or whatever his name is, the music mogul.
It was Inception.
Inception. Yes, obviously.
No, it was. I forgot his name, too.
I know. It's that name.
I'll go back and help you. Hold on. For continuity's sake, Corinne, I got you.
Okay.
His name is Jesus Christ. I said, infamous. Infamous.
Thank you. Infamous. He bets $300,000 on this race. And of course, there's a lot of scantily clad ladies hanging around the start line, as scantily clad ladies are wont to do. A sexy lady throws an item of clothing into the air, and the three vroomies are off. Some rage metal plays, and the red car gets into an accident with a minivan, and the other two cars vroom vroom, scream around the city streets. Ultimately wrapping back around to the start. Somebody throws down something fiery and the flame finish line is lit. Super exciting and hot and sexy, right, Tam?
And a bad idea.
As the music mogul wins this round, but his victory is short-lived as the popo come to break things up and everyone scatters.
Two things. The amount of time they spend on tits and ass in this movie could have been used to actually formulate a decent plot line. And also, Infamous is sitting in his car, like, kind of in a, it's almost like he's in between two very long cement guides. Like, his car is just parked in this inexplicable area with just two cement pylons, like, flanking him on either side. And then the popo come, they're, like, arresting everybody in front of him left and right. And then he just starts, like, his driver starts backing him up out of the danger zone. Beep, and a beep, cop beep, chases beep. After him on foot.
At on foot? Foot?
A cop chases after him on foot and just keeps running after him as he's, like, slowly backing up. Like, he can't go anywhere and they're not trying really hard to get him. But he's just, like, having this conversation as this car, cop's, like, barreling towards him. That's all I have to say about that.
Next, we have a super sexist scene. Of course, so far this movie has been very progressive and downright feminist. Where Nat arrives in an airplane hangar, and when she gets out of the car, the camera does a close-up of her boobs. They're like, oh, here's Nat. Oh, she's bending to get out of the oh, boobs. Boobs, 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 boobs. Oh, okay, there, now she's standing up. Thanks for that.
Oh, that time could have been used for a better plot. I don't know what I'm saying.
But boobies. She and the rest of her band get to fly in the music mogul's private jet to get to Vegas, even though it's reasonable driving distance, and I'm sure they have a ton of great... I did not finish that sentence.
I was wondering what that was. I'm all great what? What do they have a ton of great what?
Great cars, but I'm sure they also have like great tunes to listen to on the road, man. No, that wasn't great. I was auto-corrected. It was gear. They have a ton of gear for their band. They've got their their whole speaker set up. They've got instruments. They have to somehow duplicate her voice three times. You know, I mean. So they're flying. Vroom, we're in the private jet. It's amazing. Yay. And the music mogul ends up pissing off one of his girlfriends because he has what? Okay. I don't know why the girl... Well, I do know why the girlfriend's pissed off. She's had enough of his bullshit. But, like, what do you expect with a guy who literally, while they're on the private jet together, has two other ladies, like, flanking him on other sides, like, massaging him. But the girlfriend's pissed that he's given Nat the come here, baby, and fuck me eyes. So
he's a music mogul. That's how they roll.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he says shitty body shaming things to this beautiful, thin young woman who also has curves in all the right places. And she demands that he pull the plane over right now.
The plane.
Yes, the plane.
The plane. Pull the plane over.
Uh-huh. Yes.
At 23,000 feet. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And ultimately, he does. Dropping her off on some desert road. But honestly, I think she's better off there than with him. And it reminded me of a time when I was in a very toxic relationship and we were driving to Ashland, Oregon, and it was in his vehicle and we're driving on a mountain pass. It was nighttime. He was being horrible and I pulled the car off to the side of the road and I was about to like just get out and leave and just be like, you know what? I will be fine on the side of this motherfucking road in the middle of the forest on this. Anything will be better than being in the car with you. So I had a moment very similar to Image's music mogul's girlfriend, who we don't know her name, but...
It's not important.
No. What's important is she stands up for herself because she is a woman and she will not take it any longer. And she gets that fucking plane pulled over and she goes off on her merry way. She does not look back. She does not think, wait, she did not say, no, you weren't supposed to land the plane on a narrow strip of road and drop me off. She's like, fuck y'all, motherfucker, and walks off toting her roller bag. So good for her.
Louis Vuitton bags.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we also find out that the music mogul is betting $3 million on the Vegas race. And if he loses, he loses everything. But does he though? Image or Imagine or Mirage or whatever his name is.
God damn it.
He has a couple of moments where he's like, if I lose this, I lose everything. And I'm like, oh, okay, sure.
Invention. No. Damn it. It falls right out of your head.
I know.
It like goes in, falls right out.
It does. Yeah.
Anyways, Carlo and Jason arrive in Vegas for the race. And of course, they go to the club where Nat happens to be hanging out. When Carlo passes Nat, they lock eyes and the sexual tension is electric.
Ooh.
It's almost as if they've been struck by Cupid's arrow. However, Carlo keeps on walking to a different area with his brother, but he keeps his eye on the brown-haired beauty that is Nat. Nat's just trying to enjoy her drink when a major brosef approaches her and asks her to dance. Nat says no, but the bro doesn't understand that no means no, and he's very insistent, like picking her up off of the chair by her arm insistent,
mm-hmm.
which I've never seen happen in Vegas clubs without a bouncer coming in and tackling them, but I digress.
Well, but it was kind of like that time when you had that guy when we were in the club together after you danced with him, then he was like, you are the one I want, and he was like following you and you were like ducking in between people and it was a whole thing, and it took a while for the bouncer to come in and evict him. But yes,
he was following me around though, not grabbing me by the arm going, you dance with me now, I don't care.
Well, that's because you were running away from him, like you were like weaving in and out of people and he was drunk, so he was kind of staggering around.
I'm gonna echo what those club goers said to me then. Run, Nat, run. Anyways, it's not a bouncer that comes to her defense, but Carlo.
Yay.
And a fight breaks out. And apparently the brosif is on steroids because he's throwing giant pieces of furniture and it's all very ridiculous. Well, this movie has previously felt very documentary style, so I'm not sure where it came from. Eventually, Carlo ends up climbing over a second floor balcony wall to get away from the rageaholic bro, and Jason drives up in his roomy car. Carlo hops in and they drive off. So, based on the scene, we are to assume that Jason saw his brother getting in a fist fight and his first thought was, let me go get the car, I'll be right back.
It was sort of like, you know, the whole Dukes of Hazzard's twin talking kind of vibe where, you know, one's like, oh, you're in the midst of a fight, I might help out a little bit, but now I'm going to get the car so you can escape kind of thing. Just the good old boys, never meaning no harm.
As he jumps over the second floor balcony.
And one of them is blonde and the other's brunette. It's like Bo and Luke Duke all over the place. The only thing they're missing is a Confederate flag on the side of the rooms.
And windows they have to jump through because their doors don't open.
Right. That makes so much sense. I was always like, and why don't the doors open?
Because they're good old boys. Mm-hmm. Never meaning no harm. But twist! The rageaholic Brosif and his friends follow Carlo and Jason in their red vroom. But Carlo and Jason get away by driving their car under a semi-truck. I do not recommend doing this, gentle listeners.
Yes.
And Brosif 1 and Brosif 2 get their red vroomy stuck under the semi-truck. Wonk, wonk, wonk.
I love how you added Brosif into the mix there. I thought that was beautiful.
Right.
Beautiful addition.
It wasn't, bro didn't encompass his aura very well. It was Brosif.
Definitely Brosif. I completely agree.
Did not need this scene in the movie whatsoever. Could have been lovingly layered where they go under a semi into a different scene. It was completely extraneous and a lot, but whatever. Here we are. Oh, wait. Oh, and then there's a twist. There's a twist I bet you didn't see coming. The red vroomy car is owned by the gambling addict producer. What's his face?
Jerry.
Pan Agra.
Yeah.
Who finds out his car has been wrecked in the middle of his poker game. The game is all men, but don't you worry. There are several women in the room as well in their bikinis to represent for all of us women folk. Yay. Anyhow.
Gentle listeners, don't you worry. Tamara and I are both recording this in our bikinis so that we can fully represent this movie.
And now it's time for a dance break where we have to wave our tatas around. Wave our tatas around. Feminism.
I want you to step on the pedal and drive into my heart. I'm creating original race car songs as well.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. Anyhow, the producer needs to know how much his vroom vroom car is worth. And his beautiful blonde assistant informs him that the crashed car was $1.2 million. Well, the producer needs that car to be in the Vegas race, so he asks, how much is the pot for said poker game? His fellow player informs him that the pot is about $1.5 million, so the producer calls, all in! And pushes his chips into the center of the table, and he wins! Yay! Somebody's getting a replacement vroom for his old crashed one.
If it were just that easy to get several million dollars, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Everybody does it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the guys that I didn't end up ultimately dating, very nice, but also told me about how with a previous girlfriend, he went to Reno and ended up betting all of his money, like so much all of his money that he had to call his sister to send him money so that he and his girlfriend could get home.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I don't have a gambling addiction.
No. He's like,
yeah,
I like to go to Vegas. Do you? And I was like, no. We are not visiting any Indian casinos. We are not going to Vegas. We are not going to Reno. No.
We're not betting copious amounts of money on car races. Just putting that out there as well.
Completely. But we will wear bikinis while we podcast our car racing movie. So, it's the big race. How exciting. Woo! Tamara's thrilled. I can see the anticipation building on her face.
Can you though?
She's lounging back with her hands behind her head being like, okay, look, there's cars. There's more cars racing. Wow, what a surprise.
Another race? Gosh, I was just going to say, it's been too long since we had a race. I think we need another one.
Uh-huh.
Oh, look, there it is.
It's the day of the race, and at the pre-race gathering, there are lots of sexy ladies. What? So surprising. Who are scantily clad. What? The slow motion sexy car washing scene. So Tamara, did Larry watch this movie? Just curious.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Because I watched like half of it at the half hour of it in my lunch break. Uh-huh. And so last time I made him watch a movie with me and I was like, did you like it? He goes, I don't know. I didn't see the first 20 minutes. So I couldn't quite. So I was like, I'm not going to do that to you again because I'm pretty sure you're not going to like this. And I don't want you using the excuse that you didn't see the first 30 minutes to weigh in on your choice. Did he need to see the first 30 minutes? Absolutely not. No.
You just go, room, 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 room. And there you go. Done.
Mm-hmm. Babes, bets, room, room. Somebody dies. Babes, bets, room, room. The end.
Tamara, spoiler alert. You ruined it.
Oh, wait, wait. No, no. No, no, I didn't. Because I didn't tell about the shh, kidnapping.
That you didn't see that one coming. Let's continue on with the plot of this riveting movie. Jason shows Carlo around, ultimately bringing him to... Oh, and his name is Carlo. I didn't ever pick up on that. Broom, oh, broom, lo. Ultimately bringing him to Carlo's... His name made absolutely no sense to me, but now it does. Not that I haven't heard of people being named Carlo before, but within the context of... Him and his brother and his, it just didn't, he did not look like he would be a Carlo. That's all.
Yeah. It's a very Italian name.
Yeah. And he did not look a very Italian. Jason, the dreamer, shows Carlo, the war hero, around, ultimately bringing him to Carlo's favorite uncle. And by favorite, I mean not favorite. Michael. Michael tries to vibe with Carlo. I love this. I know you must have seen some shit. I can see the pain in your eyes. You must have been through some crazy Charlie Don't Surf stuff. I had to look that up. Over there. I think it's an Apocalypse Now reference. Carlo isn't impressed, shockingly. He says, you don't know me. You don't know me. Carlo is more concerned about what kind of trouble Michael is getting his younger brother Jason into. And Michael... who is so evolved, sagely says, you've got to understand, the universe comes together to bring all of this to us. It's a learning process, kid. Our days are numbered, so if it ain't fun, it ain't worth doing. Spoken like a man who doesn't really need to work. Then Michael punches one of his bodyguards in the stomach, chuckling as he shakes his hand in pain, and the bodyguard stonily stands there.
Okay. Could have also gone without seeing that, but whatever.
Carlo walks off and eventually runs into Nat. She thanks him for saving her and offers to buy him a drink. Michael wasn't saving anyone, okay, except for himself.
No, no.
Michael is a selfish asshole. She offers to buy him a drink after the race. They both explain what they're doing there. Her to sing with her band and some of her rockin' race car songs. And him to watch his little brother race. He also explains that the drinks are free at the after party. And she smiles and chuckles, saying, even better. Yeah. And the scene ends.
A bit of time has passed. And infamous, there it is. The music mogul introduces his latest acquisition to the assembled people on the makeshift racetrack. Mm-hmm. However, I don't think there was any talks of a record deal because he's talking about the band, Nat's band, called Moving Violation.
Ooh.
They're situated behind a roll-up garage and the screen lifts up to reveal them on a stage as Nat sings sexily. I want to be your car tonight so you can take me for a ride. Is this the rest of the lyrics here, Corinne, for reference? Yes.
Yeah.
And you could grip me like your steering wheel just for tonight. I'm going to be tough like steel. I've got the bumper that you like. I've got the kind of rims that shine. You turbocharge me if you like it fast, because I'm the kind of girl that's built to last.
Oh, my God. Oh, Nat, watch out. Tab's coming for your job.
So picture that in three different voices sung by a sultry Nat.
Oh.
And you can imagine if my song stylings did it any justice. Everybody's captivated.
Everybody. Captivated. I was captivated
everybody's
by you.
Captivated.
Particularly when you sang about being the bumper that you like. What is these lines? It's terrible.
You're the one to pick this movie, Grin. You're the one to pick this movie.
Oh my God, the car our song lyrics are ridiculous. I love them so much.
Carlo the war hero watches her sing and is enchanted, but so is his uncle Michael. Michael's also captivated by Nat Siren's song and says to a random person next to him, "She's going to be my wife." Ugh. Nat finishes her song and the garage doors go down on the stage, covering the band up. Michael's face falls and he looks so sad because his one and only true love has disappeared.
It just had a vision of, you know, when you would go to Chuck E. Cheese and there would be the band that would play and like the curtains would draw
the
back
animatronic.
And suddenly they'd be like, ding, 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 ding. And then the curtains would close after they finished their song. It's just like this.
So it's so funny. I was talking to my coworker about Chuck E. Cheese today. Because I was like, oh, they have a two-story one in San Jose. And he's like, I've never been to Chuck E. Cheese. And I'm like,
what?
Ugh, you haven't lived.
Seriously. I used to go on dates to Chuck E. Cheese.
I was trying to talk him into going to Dave & Buster's. We were going to play hooky from work there and then at 2:30 in the afternoon. And I was like, let's go to Dave & Buster's.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. I'm like, it's like an adult Chuck E. Cheese. He goes, I've never been to Chuck E. Cheese. I'm like, God damn it. Anywho, I digress. The race is about to start. The people whose cars are being raced. Jerry, the producer. Mr. Chang. Is he new? Was Mr. Chang here before?
I don't think Mr. Chang was here before.
Okay, well, Mr. Chang is also there, who is both men who wager $1 million apiece. And the cars are on a closed track of sorts. It looks like they're on an old airstrip. And Jerry's car wins. Yay!
Woo-hoo!
The next race is going to be starting soon, when Infamous's driver ends up tripping over a carjack and injuring his foot, meaning he can't drive.
Oh, no.
Infamous eyes Nat up and down and says, I'll give you $50,000 for you and your band to drive. But she flat turns him down and says, it's not about the money. He counters saying, everybody has a price. $150,000 and your band gets a contract. One of her bandmates turns to her.
This writing is like Santa writing.
But it's so accurate. This is so accurate. Oh, hold on. Center myself. Gotta do this justice. One of her bandmates turns to her and says sincerely as he squints into the sun, listen, Natasha, if you decide to do this, don't do this for us or for the money. Do it because it's what you were born to do.
Yeah.
Natasha thinks a bit and then says savvily, $300,000. And Infamous stammers, I thought you said it wasn't about the money. And Nat narrows her eyes at him and answers, everybody has a price. They pound on it and he tells her to kick some ass before they head off in different directions.
That was beautiful. That passionate scene that you did there. Don't do it for the money or for us.
Oh my God.
So
that
good.
That was so dumb.
In stark contrast to Infamous, Michael approaches Jason, the dreamer, who is hanging out with a couple of sexy ladies next to the car he's going to race, smoking a cigarette, because in 2007, smoking cigarettes was much cooler than it is now.
Mm-hmm. I still smoked in 2007, I think. Yay, carcinogens!
Woohoo!
And if you ever wondered where my sexy, sultry voice came from, gentle listeners, now you know.
I thought it was the voice lessons, but I was wrong. So good. So good. Michael yells at Jason the Dreamer, saying, you need to focus. Your head's all over the place. Do you even know what you're going to do? Jason the Dreamer states uncertainly, win the race? And I'm like, no wonder Carlo's looking out for him. Jason's brain hamster does not seem to be like the speediest on that wheel. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Michael cups Jason's face with his hands, much like Larry cups Tamara's face. And Michael says...
Oh, God. Why? Why do you gotta keep pulling him back in? Just let it go.
I expect more from you than that, Jason. Jason's hamster is working on the hamster wheel, but honestly, his hamster is kind of out to lunch, and he responds a tad more certainly. Win the race for you? Michael's bodyguard grabs Jason's man bits, and Michael looks intensely into Jason's eyes and slaps his face, saying, I need you to wake up. Care about you, all right? I just want you to... Beautiful? What?
Ah, that's... he wants you to beautiful.
That was an autocorrect thing, and I just want you to beautiful. And then he goes in for the signature Larry forehead kiss and
oh God.
And no. Professes to his nephew.
La 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 la. la, can't hear you. La, 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 la.
I love you. You understand? Michael starts walking off and points at the car. This is the bitch you should be paying attention to. The bodyguard releases Jason's man bits and walks off. And Jason knows that if he doesn't win, his man bits may be in danger. And he's wearing some kind of like douchey white suit with a red collared shirt underneath it. But then he has a gray weird like sweater vest thing going on that's like closed with one button. It's very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't know from that past interaction that Jason and Michael were related. Michael's his uncle, you say? And he's grabbing him by the man bits and threatening his life to win the race?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
He's nurturing. Yeah. He's nurturing. He's inspiring, mm-hmm. you know.
Got it.
Yeah.
Just mm-hmm. using unconventional means.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
In a twist, we find out that Infamous's original driver faked his injury. What?
In a stupid way. I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud?
Oh, I'm feeling your passion just growing for this movie, and I get it. I get it. Jason knows that he's got to win, but what he doesn't realize is that he'll be racing against Nat, who I'm pretty sure will dust his lily white ass. Meanwhile, Michael bets with the producer that if Jason wins this race, he'll get Jerry's red vroom vroom car.
Wait, who's Jerry again? I know. Jason's the dreamer. Michael's the uncle.
Jerry's the producer.
Okay. Oh. Jerry's the producer. Got
you. With the slow motion pillow fight.
Uh-huh. Okay. See, there's all these players that just pop in and there's like names. And I'm like, even when I was watching the movie, it's not your scripting at all. It was the fucking movie where I'm like, who are you again? Oh.
If he loses, he'll give Jason 2 platinum bars. However, I'm guessing it matters on how big the platinum bars are, but when I looked it up online, one platinum bar is worth $10,254. So at about $20,500, it's hard to make sense to bet that against $1.2 million car, but the plot thickens because in this world, which is momentarily revealed, platinum bars are worth $1.3 million each, which is over the double the value of his car. So it's just a bad bet any way you slice it. So on this race, oh, Infinity Image, you know, the music mogul, is betting $3 million. And Michael is betting 4 platinum bars. So according to Corinne Math, it's $5.2 million. This seems like a bad bet as well. And Infamous questions this.
Infamous! That's his name.
I had to look it up every single time. I had to look it up.
Oh my God.
If I used it. Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed your scrambling. Infinity, Inception, Image, whatever the fuck your name is.
So Infamous questions this unequal bet. I only brought $3 million in cash with me, Michael assures him. Don't worry about it. If you win, you get the bars. And if I win, I'll take $3 million and your driver. I'm sorry. Are we buying people now? Is that what we're doing?
What kind of reverse reparations bullshit is this?
Seriously. I was like, I mean, Infamous is black, so reverse reparations, hooray-ish, kind of, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Regardless, buying people, not a cool thing to do. Gentle listeners, just in case you were wondering, not a cool thing to do. They shake on it, and the cars go vroom, vroom at the start line, and then vroom around the racetrack. In the home stretch, it looks like Natasha's going to win, and then Jason hits the nitro boost. Oh, so exciting, right, Tam? Were you sitting on the edge of your seat being like, what will happen next?
I was kind of surprised that they let nitrous in there. Like, I thought that usually when they have street racing,
mm-hmm.
it's generally like one or the other, but
right.
not both, because
right.
it seems like an unfair fight. But, you know, that's just me and my crazy race talk. I know I have those pie-in-the-sky dreams about fair racing rules, but what do I know?
I was surprised as well by this, and I thought the same thought actually occurred to me. So, yes.
We were ahead of our time.
Exactly. Regardless, the dreamer jets past Natasha. The spoiler flies off his room mobile. And then the car, in an act of physics defying, I don't know what the fuck, the car lifts off and flies through the sky, flipping through the air. That spoiler was just keeping that car all together. Natasha slams the brakes on her car to avoid getting into an accident and slams into a sidewall. Meanwhile, Jason, the dreamer's car, lands on its hood and slides across the finish line. Carlo runs towards the flattened car, yelling, "Jason! Jason!" And we see, in the most poignant moment of this movie, we see a close-up of Jason looking immaculate through the non-existent window of his car as a single trickle of blood runs down his forehead. He says in a dazed voice with a smile on his face, "I won, bro!" And then his car explodes! So much for Jason's dreams. They were realized in that moment when he won and was incinerated.
A dreamer no more.
A dreamer no more. Carlo slow-mo falls to his knees. And I shouldn't be laughing because Jason is in a fiery inferno, but it looks so ridiculous that I can't help myself. Carlo screams, "Jason, no!" He tries running towards the flaming car, but a guy in a fire retardant suit tackles him to the ground and Carlo yells, "Michael, I'll kill you!" as the rescue team puts out the fire. Meanwhile, Nat's band runs to her car where she is knocked out and they yell for someone to call an ambulance. Michael collects all his bets and tells the bodyguard to get what's mine. As in, he now owns Nat? What the fuck? How many what the fuck moments are in this movie? You know, I just...
Well, that's the theme of this month, so it's fitting. However, I had a question because there was two guys there in fire retardant suits.
Uh-huh.
One of them was trying to put Jason's car out with a fire extinguisher, yes, which is what you would expect. And the other one was holding Carlo back.
Yeah.
I'm like, that guy should have been running to the car before Carlo in his fire retardant suit to try to extract Jason from it. But he was not. He was just like, "Oh, I'm just going to hold you back, hold you back, hold you back, hold you back.
Let's just wait to see if the car explodes. And then once it does, we'll figure it out from there."
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why you don't street race with street cars. Because if you have racetrack cars, then they have ways of just like being able to not crunch you inside and they could pull you out easily. So
I was very surprised when his car landed hood down, skids across the finish line, and Jason's just there. "I won!" And I was like,
"Yeah,
what? You're not dead yet? Okay."
Was that the same car that went under a truck? Because that would lead us to believe that the roof is very, 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 very low.
I know. Like, he should have just been totally squisher-rude, and he wasn't.
So unrealistic. Come on now. Do better.
You're ruining my whole, like, documentary vision of this movie.
Yes. Yes. So entirely accurate up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. So an ambulance comes to take Nat away. But this is Michael's sex trafficking ambulance, not a real ambulance. Nat's band asks where they're taking Nat to, and the attendant says, "Los Angeles." When the band asks to ride in the ambulance, the attendant says no and closes the door on them. So Nat's band calls her mom and lets her know that Natasha's been in an accident and she's unconscious. When mom asks, "What hospital?" they say, "They don't know because they have no idea that Nat has been won in a bet by Michael." We end the scene with a view of the parked ambulance and a helicopter flying away. And we hear over a radio,
"A package is being delivered to the house."
And one might wonder what the package is and which house it's being delivered to. Well, gentle listeners, keep those pants on because you'll find out after the break.
Dear God, we're back.
But you're going to have to wait on the package in-house resolution because first we're going back to see Carlo, who's pounding on a pawn shop door. A kind of rough-around-the-edges guy answers the door and is thrilled to see Carlo. But Carlo pushes aside niceties and says, "You're still in business?" The guy gestures with his head into the pawn shop where there's another guy behind the counter and a customer being helped and says, "Of course I'm still in business." Carlo cuts to the chase. "Great. I'm gonna need guns and ammo." The guy cuts him off. "Shh, shh, secrets. Different business. Come into the back with me." And once they're in the back room, Carlo demands, I need C4. Lots of it. Enough to blow up a house.
Mm-hmm.
His friend tries to get Carlo to check himself before he wrecks himself, saying, are you sure about this? And once Carlo assures him that he is, his friend says, okay, I got you. And then breaks out briefcase after briefcase of weapons in C4. Carlo assures him he'll pay him back and then leaves the pawn shop and rides his motorcycle like a ragey entitled asshole through traffic and a railroad crossing, narrowly missing getting hit by tons of cars and a train and causing a couple of accidents in the mix. We next see him climbing around on craggy rocks adjacent to a house with a backyard that has a pool filled with, of course, sexy ladies.
Woo-woo.
And an armed bodyguard holding a gun off to the side.
Inside the house, we see Nat asleep in the bedroom, wearing a negligee and covered in a surprisingly sheer sheet. I'm very confused by this transparent sheet, but who is even more confused by everything is Nat, who wakes up with Michael staring creepily at her. She asks, puzzled, where am I? And what am I doing here? And how did you find a sheet this transparent?
She does not say that.
She should, because have you ever seen a sheet like that before?
Yeah, that's called a curtain. Those like wafty curtains that used to be under real curtains so that you can kind of like obscure your window but not completely block out the light. That's what was laying on her.
Michael smoothly replies, well, you're at my place. Actually, your place now. Because when I saw you at the track, our eyes met and our souls transferred, and I realized that everything I am is you.
What the fuck?
Nat looks at Michael, confused, understandably, at the word salad coming out of his mouth and reeling because of her concussion. Michael continues, and why you're here is Image, Mirage, whatever the fuck your name is. And I made a bet on your race. Nat rightfully looks pissed, saying, I don't belong to either of you. But Michael knows that Nat belongs to his heart. So obviously, the right thing to do was kidnap her. When she realizes how awesome he is, she will have no regrets. It's a classic Beauty and the Beast situation, right? Right?
No. I just kidnapped you because I really, really love you.
Nothing says I love you like a kidnapping, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In a puzzling turn of events, because everything has been so totally normal up until now, a helicopter arrives at Michael's compound as a line of four sexy women wearing white V-neck spandex tops and white shorts do sun salutations, oblivious to the copter that's whipping their hair around.
I know, right? I'm like, there's a helicopter landing and these women are doing like yoga poses.
Like feet away from them.
As if nothing's happening. It's just like Michael's like up there on his walkie-talkie going, whatever happens, you ladies, sun salutation. You fucking hear me? Sun salutation. Do not stop. Do not stop no matter what. And they delivered.
If you aren't done with your 1,000 sun salutations, our karma will not be right in this house and things are going to get all fucked up. You sun salutation that shit, okay?
So what you're saying is that he has a bevy of beautiful women at his disposal and yet he wants Nat.
Yes.
Nat is his corazón.
Yeah, because he's not telling the other women that they can have his house. He's telling Nat that it's her house now, just like it's her heart now that's, you know. She has his heart now. Beautiful, right? So beautiful.
No. No, it's so creepy. It gives off the creepiest of creepy vibes.
Seriously. I was like, Michael, I don't remember the nickname that they gave him in the beginning. I just always think of him as Michael the Asshole. But, like, he's just... His hair gets wilder and wilder throughout this movie. The look in his eyes gets like more and more twitchy. It's Michael is
he gets more and more unhinged.
Yeah.
Like as the movie goes on.
Unhinged is the perfect word for this. Yes. Two men in lab coats come out of the whirly bird holding briefcases. They do not take a single look at the ladies who are sun saluting. And we also find out that... Michael isn't actually really rich. He's just a counterfeiter. The men wearing lab coats inform him that the most recent round of counterfeit bills aren't any good, and Michael tells them, fix it. The duo says they will, and leave the briefcases behind. Just that simple, huh? Meanwhile, Nat has changed into a black V-neck spandex top and black shorts, because she's a badass. She's not going to sun salutation all day for Michael with a helicopter, like, landing and taking off behind her. She's looking for a motherfucking way out. However, the phone isn't connected to anything, and when she looks outside into the backyard, night is falling, and Michael is dancing around a fire pit in his jammy bottoms and robe, throwing counterfeit money into the fire pit. Nat knows that she needs to bide her time and wait for the perfect moment to get away from this banana saw man. However, little does she know, she's got a rescuer coming her way. That is, if he doesn't unknowingly blow her up in his quest for vengeance against his no-good Nick uncle.
It's a bit later in the evening, and Carlo has set a charge of C4 so it's ready to detonate when he hits the switch. He takes out a security guard and continues on his quest for revenge. Back inside the mansion, Michael is talking to some mysterious guy who is demanding $13 million in counterfeit bills that are good, good counterfeit bills, not that smudgy bullshit that was brought to him earlier. Michael lets him know that he just needs a little more time, but the mysterious man who's holding a gun up to a blindfolded man's head is a man of principle and holds firm. A deadline is a deadline, he says. If you don't get me the money, I'm coming for you. Michael pretends they're static on the line. Oh, you're breaking up. I'm so sorry. I can't. As the mystery man shoots the man with the blindfold on. Who is the guy with the blindfold? Tamara asks.
We don't know who the guy with the blindfold is.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It seems like he should be somebody in relation to Michael or something like that.
Right.
But yeah. Yeah.
No. He's just a pawn to show how badass this mystery guy is.
Mm-hmm. But for all we know, this rando guy who only makes a couple of appearances in this movie, for all Michael knows, he's just taking his gun and shooting into a pillow. Because the guy who gets shot isn't making struggling noises, does not yell, does not scream, nothing. It's just bang, bang, bang.
Right.
This guy, he just crumples and that's it. Done.
But he's dead.
Yeah.
Dead. Killed by the mystery man.
He did not go out for cigarettes. He just got killed by the mystery man very quietly. This movie has violence and absolutely no blood, except for this one trickle of blood that goes down the dreamer's forehead before he ignites into flame.
Anywho, so that happened. And Michael is informed by his staff that his guests are here for dinner. So he disappears off into another room wearing his jammy pants and robe. Apparently for his guests. Got to dress up for the occasion.
Why wear a shirt for guests? You know, that's what I'm always saying. I can't wait for you to Larry to come over so I can have my open robe and my jammy pants on.
No, it's okay. Nat tries sneaking down the stairs when she sees from her view Michael exiting the room. However, a bodyguard cuts her off, informing her that it's past her curfew, so she needs to go back upstairs. At first, she seems compliant, and then she gives him a quick kick, causing him to tumble down the stairs.
Yeah!
Unfortunately, there are a couple of other guys who come out of the woodwork to restrain her. However, Carlo has made it into the house, sees Nat and the whole situation, and leaps out from behind a door, taking down the other two dudes.
Yay!
Faces are thrown, mirrors are smashed, and Carlo and Nat make a break for it, running out of the house and snagging a car. Fortunately, the keys are in it, because why not? And they start driving off as automatic gunfire is heard behind them. They close in on the gate, and Carlo commands Nat, ram it! However, she's not interested in wrecking their getaway vehicle, but he assures her it's cool, cool. And as she approaches the gate, it blows up, splintering into bits. However, there is another car in hot pursuit. But fear not, Carlo has attached a charge to a light pole and sends it flying down, blocking the road behind them and allowing them to get away.
A light pole? They couldn't think of something better to, like, fall and block the road. It's like, here's this light pole that you can just quickly move off to the side.
Probably, yeah. I was going to say, they could probably ram the light pole
and
make
just
it
move
just
it.
Fine.
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
Ugh, beware of light poles. Dangerous. As Carlo and Nat continue down the road, Nat asks, "What were you doing there?" He asks back, "What were you doing there?" I'm like, "Way to not answer the question, dude." She replies, "I have no idea. I was kidnapped." Carlo asks, "By my uncle? Who the fuck do you think?" No, she just ended up in your uncle's house. Like, seriously?
No, by his bodyguard, Stanley.
Oh, okay. Yeah, his uncle didn't have anything to do with it. Right. Nat asks in disbelief, "That guy's your uncle?" He says, "Yeah, he killed my brother, and I was there for vengeance." Nat responds, "Well, thanks for saving me again." They pull over to ditch the car because LoJack. And while this is happening, Michael, who I suspect does lots of cocaine, is in the kitchen, completely unbothered by sounds of glass breaking, explosions, and automatic gunfire. I'm guessing the kitchen is soundproofed so as not to bother people with kitchen sounds. Michael is pontificating to some guy about the meaning of life being about letting go. Ov's not one to practice what he preaches. Michael, you need to take a look at the man in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
He and his dinner guest have Bloody Marys and a nice little vegetarian feast in front of them. Because while Michael may think he can own people, he certainly would never, ever eat anything with a face. He is by far too evolved for that. One of his bodyguards informs him that Nat has been taken by his nephew Carlo, and they took the Maserati.
What? Not the Maserati?
Vroom, vroom.
Cut to Nat and Carlo walking in slow motion away from a flaming car and ultimately hitching a ride to a cheap motel. They get a room, and when Nat hops into the shower to wash the filth of being kidnapped off her body, Carlo disappears. When she gets out of the shower and finds herself alone, she calls her mom to assure her that she's okay. Mom is relieved and asks, "What's going on?" Nat assures her, "Don't worry about me, Mom. Things just got a little crazy." You think?
I'm sorry.
I'll explain it all to you tomorrow.
No, Mom. It's all good. It's all good. Cool, cool, cool. Nothing to see here. Just got into a car accident, was knocked unconscious, was one in a bet, and have now been rescued from
a kidnapping where I was whisked off to a desolate villa by some crazed counterfeit man.
Yeah.
Cool.
Just, you know, these things happen every day. It's kind of like going to In-N-Out Burger. Nat obviously takes her In-N-Out animal style because what has happened to her that she's like, no, Mom, totally cool, is completely animal style. Just saying.
Nat gets off the phone and heads to a nearby bar where she finds Carlo, who is drinking a very penis-shaped bottle of alcohol.
It was so
weird. I didn't even notice that.
It was like two giant ball sacks with a boop on top. And then there were pictures of it in the background. I think it was almost product placement, but it wasn't like the clearest of product placement. Yeah, it was odd.
Maybe they thought you'd just recognize it by the shape.
Mm-hmm.
What would it be called? Pinkila.
I just love it when I have those shots of Pinkila. They make me go a little wild, though.
They commiserate with each other and then slow dance, which I guess ultimately leads to them sleeping together, though we don't even see them kissing because the next morning we get a very naked Natasha in bed waking up and talking to Carlo, who's getting dressed. She shares that she overheard Michael on the phone and he's got money problems. Back at Michael's mansion, he's crumpling up money and is informed by one of his lackeys that the counterfeiting machine is broken. Michael gets a call from the producer, who invites him to a race in the desert. At first, Michael turns him down, but then changes his mind when he finds out that he has a chance to make big, big, big money. He asks if he can place a $25 million bet, and the producer, who apparently breathes money, agrees. And I'm a little disappointed with this movie in the scene because the woman with the producer and Michael are wearing way too many clothes and not nearly as sexy as they should be. After Michael gets off the phone with the producer, his lackeys inform him that he will need to sell everything to get together $25 million. Michael, who knows the secret of life is letting go, says, "Sell everything. But there's one thing he can't let go of. Nat. Mm. He has a plan to get her to drive for him.
Mm-mm-mm. I would not be driving for him. I'd say fuck you very much, Michael. Sorry. No. Not spoiler. Sorry.
Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler.
Ooh. Michael's plan is have his henchmen go to Nat's garage and kick her band's ass and kidnap Nat's mom, Sally. When Nat goes back to her garage with Carlo, she finds out what has happened and the phone rings. She answers it and immediately demands, "Where's my mother, you bitch?" And I am just like distracted to the point of way distraction because, okay, so Carlo and Nat, they have their scene where they dance together and then she mm-hmm. ends up naked in bed the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no kiss. Do they ever kiss in this movie?
At the very, very end.
Oh, okay. Dry kiss, I guess. Mm.
Dry everything in this movie.
Except for all the blood pumping through my heart at the sheer excitement of all of these scenes.
You sound very, very believable when you say that, Corinne.
Nat demands, "Where's my mother, you bitch?" We see Sally tied up and gagged in a boxing gym. Lackey number one tells a guy skipping rope to take care of Sally, but not in a killing kind of way.
Again, what the fuck are these like exposition shots that mean nothing? You, gym guy, take care of her. But I'm going to sit here and watch you for 25 seconds jumping rope before I actually ask you. And then you're going to say, "Take care of her, take care of her." No, haha, just take care of her. Like, make sure she doesn't go anywhere, okay? Like, extraneous. Way too much information we don't need in a scene that's just injected for whatever reason to just, okay, that's there. Great. All right. Continue.
The guy does jump rope for a while. I'm like, he's pretty good at jumping rope. Go guy.
Yeah. Miss Mary Mac makes me want to go in and do some double dutch.
It's the day of the race, and while Carlo is tailing one of Michael's lackeys to find Sally, Nat's mom, using his armed war hero skills, Nat is in the desert, but I spelled it dessert. She approaches Michael, who is being massaged by one sexy lady, fed a beverage by another sexy lady, and accompanied by a third. He tells her how he feels like they're destined to be together, because nothing says destiny and lady bait like surrounding yourself with other sexy ladies, right? Right?
I feel I'm going to disagree with you there, Corinne.
This is like so dating app style, because I'll be like looking at pictures of guy. Oh, here you are with two sexy ladies in sexy referee outfits. Oh, okay. Why does this make me want to date you?
That seems to be the basis of this movie's intent, because all the guys that are like, you're the one for me, pay no attention to the scantily clad foxy ladies that are massaging me, feeding me grapes, doing yoga in front of my house that I'm ogling. Just they mean nothing to me. Nothing.
Nothing. Michael promises Nat that once she wins the race, Sally will be so super duper safe, okay? And obviously it goes without saying that once she wins the race, she will automatically fall in love with him because ovs. Nat doesn't say much to him and leaves shortly to get ready for said race in her vroom vroom car. Tamara said so much anticipation.
No. I'm just, oh my God. Oh God. We're at the home stretch, people.
We are.
The home stretch. And just when you thought there couldn't be any more surprises in this movie, lo and behold, more surprises are in store when we find out that Infamous's ex is now with Jerry the producer. Ooh. Also, one of the drivers Nat will be racing against is the driver that caused her dad's wreck. The driver that traumatized her childhood self. Where did that come in? Who knows? But here it is.
Yeah, and this driver has, like, half of his face scarred up, I'm guessing, from a burn from also being in a flaming car. So I'm just like, I think he was just doing what he was supposed to do with his racing, honestly. And I think he got fucked up, too. He just lived.
But they try to make him look evil and treacherous because they're making eyes on each other. However, fear not, because Nat's band is there with her in the desert, so she has moral support. And she swears through gritted teeth, "I'm gonna win this race." Back in L.A., Carlo has located Mama Sally and finds where she's being held in the boxing gym. He goes in and points a gun at Michael's lackey, demanding, "Let her go!" The jump roping lackey, correct? Yep, that's the guy.
Sure.
The lackey starts untying one of Sally's wrists, but Carlo gets sacked from behind by another bad guy. So much for his situational awareness. Hey, let me stand with my back towards an open doorway. Nothing could possibly go wrong with that, right?
Right.
Carlo's gun gets knocked out of his hand and skids across the floor, and two bad guys start kicking Carlo's ass. But Sally takes her loosened tie and starts working on freeing herself. Back in the desert, there are four cars at the starting line, ready to race. Daddy Killer looks over at Nat with eyes that say, "You're next." And Nat looks over at him with eyes that say, "Fuck right off, asshole, you're done." A sexy lady informs the assembled race car gentlemen that the pot is up for $100 million. Another sexy lady gets the race going by waving the flag, and they all drive in their vroom vrooms and imagine Mirage, or whatever his name is. Intrepid? No.
Inspiration.
Infamous.
Yes.
His driver gets pushed off the track immediately, and now there are only three cars left. I do have to say that one thing that this movie does well is give really great panoramic shots of women's asses as they wave the green flag for the car races to start.
They do.
And
they
this scene was no exception. Back at the boxing gym, Sally's freed herself and grabs the gun from the floor. She comes up behind the fighting men and fires a warning shot. Back on the racetrack, Nat is not taking safe driving seriously because she receives a call on her cell phone and does not go hands-free, gentle listeners. She just picks up her phone and says, "Okay, perfect timing." So she's literally driving hundreds of miles an hour with one hand. But she's skilled and kicks it into high gear. The Japanese businessman and Mr. Cheng's driver, a.k.a. Daddy Killer, loses control and goes over a cliff. So then it's just Nat and Jerry, the producer's driver, correct?
Yeah.
Nat, in a total boss bitch move, speeds ahead of Jerry, the producer's car. She has quite a lead over him, and she's about to cross the finish line. And then stops short and waits and waits. And Jerry, the producer's car, crosses the finish line ahead of her, winning the race.
Yay.
Michael is pissed and makes a call saying, "Take care of the mother." But it's Carlo who answers the phone saying, "I already did. She's fine." Michael recognizes the voice, "Carlo?" And Carlo responds, "Payback's a bitch." The producer has won and is thrilled and lets Nat know that he'll think of a way to repay her. I'd say a few million would be a great idea, but what do I know? And here's what ends up happening. The producer opens a record label for Nat's band, and they go on to be wildly popular with their musical-themed music. He also buys Nat a couple of million-dollar room rooms in yellow and red, and Carlo and Nat end up racing her cars like dicks on surface streets in L.A. that are oddly abandoned.
Well,
after
they're
going
around cars, but it's not, like, as condensed.
It's not. It's... Yeah. They're going down Los Feliz, and I've never seen Los Feliz that empty except for 2 o'clock in the morning, so it doesn't make any sense.
I'm just saying that because contextually, the way they're driving is like dicks. If there weren't any cars on the street, then it'd just be like whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it. This is my pet peeve. Driving on the fucking freeway when there are these like jackass cars that are like street racing. So you're driving down the freeway and then you have these cars being like vroom, vroom, like in and out of traffic around you. And I'm just like, fuck off. And that's what they're doing, but on surface streets.
But they did it after they kissed. And that's what matters.
Oh, yeah. And the kiss was... I didn't even comment on the quality of the kiss because I don't even really remember the kiss.
Exactly. Exactly, Corinne. And as for Uncle Michael, I'm pretty sure he's killed by the guy he owes money to. Nat closes the movie by saying, "Good cars will get you from point A to point B, and great cars, well, they'll just get you into trouble."
Ooh.
The end. Oh, sweet sassy molasses.
Oh, aren't you glad that I brought this beautiful movie into your life?
Don't talk to me. I'm kind of mad at you right now. So, Corinne,
yes?
Since you love this movie so much, how many dry kisses do you give it?
Well, let's first go over the dry kiss rating scale. One kiss is do not watch, which why would anybody even bother giving that rating to this movie? I mean, psh, to kiss.
Mm-hmm.
If you only had three channels, you might watch it for a while before changing to an infomercial and then inadvertently buying yourself knives and then feeling guilty, particularly when they don't cut a can as advertised. So many regrets. Three kisses? Yay! We'd kiss this movie again. Four kisses? The date night you've been waiting for. Five kisses. Beautiful ass cinematography. And if this movie were life, you'd have gotten dressed by cute cartoon animals, some squirrels, immaculately washed your dishes, and you rode to work on a unicorn.
Hmm.
I feel conflicted in my heart of hearts about what I should give this movie. How many dry kisses I should give this movie.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I kind of want to give it one because it's so darn bad. However, I suggest that everybody watch this movie because it's so amazing. So I'm going to go for a good, I mean, I in many ways I feel five dry kisses because it's kind of perfection. But I will say it does have a stunning lack of diversity of just about anything. So that'll knock it down a point. The plot is, you know, it's good, but it's just a tiny bit convoluted.
A tiny bit. A tiny bit. I would be wowed if anybody could follow that outline because the movie was bananas. Like you, I'm like, what happened? Who are you? Where are you going? Wait, what? I don't know. Oh, wait, who are you? Just, and how'd you get over there?
Uh-huh.
You're not the main character? Oh no, because you died. Damn it. All right, you? That was me the whole movie.
And why they had Michael be a counterfeiter instead of a drug dealer makes absolutely no sense to me.
Amongst many, many other things.
Everything else just came together perfectly in this movie. But that one detail, yeah.
Oh, I beg to differ. So hard.
So I give this movie 2 3/4 dry kisses because...
Wow.
It's a terrible movie, but I also really love it.
Oh my God.
And I think it earns every single dry kiss in a variety of different ways, including the one dry kiss and including the five dry kisses, because this movie is perfectly bad. Oh, it's so perfectly bad. So, Tamara, you're looking at me dubiously, but I'm sticking with 2 3/4 dry kisses. Fear not. How many dry kisses are you giving this award-winning movie? For ass cinematography.
I'm so giving you so much crazy eye. Oh my God. I'm going to give it 1.5 dry kisses because it did not make me fall asleep like Adam's rib. But I did stay awake the whole time. But at the end, I went, what the fuck was that?
Uh-huh.
It was convoluted, confusing, had so many storylines that went nowhere or happened for no good goddamn reason. It really was like, I felt like it was trying to be like the Fast and the Furious. If I remember correctly, like Fast and the Furious was in 2001 and was wildly successful. Mm-hmm. And they made a sequel around 2006, which was a year before this one. So I feel like they were trying to jump on that bandwagon because the Fast and the Furious had integral characters that all kind of meshed and they had their own storylines, but their relationship to each other made sense. And then Red Line said, we're going to just take that premise and drop a grenade right in the middle of it because there's a producer, there's a music mogul, there's a counterfeiter, there's Mr. Chang that inexplicably comes in and out, then all the other players. It's just,
this is the one area where I think that this movie does fall apart. In the Fast and the Furious, it was full of beautiful people of all sexes. This movie only had beautiful people of the female persuasion,
right? And then there was the guys that
were not
looked like, that looked like Jersey Shore wannabes. It is just, I can't rate it other than what I've said. And I can't do a synopsis on it because I still am just sitting there going, huh? Like, I feel like you have, this is one of those resonating movies with you because you saw it in the theater with Chloe. And then you had that like crazy coincidental like car explosion happen in the adjoining garage. And so maybe that just like seared this movie into your head as being good. And it's really not. It's really, really not.
Oh, it's a terrible movie.
I would happily never watch this movie ever again. And I don't think anybody else should either. Contrary to what you said. So 1.5 dry kisses, convoluted, confused. confusing, bad storyline, bad acting, beautiful cars, and a bunch of bevy of big busted skinny women and not much else. So 1.5 dry kisses.
I like really bad movies. And so I genuinely love
She's
movie.
Caressing her Redline DVD cover, gentle listeners.
I also really enjoyed the Mary-Kate and Ashley, you know, movie New York Minute, as well as their earlier movies that they made as well. I know that they're bad, though, is the key to the whole thing. So they're not something that I would ever suggest you watch, except to enjoy it in the recap style that we do.
I'm thinking that we may need to change our format. Either so bad they're good movies, or just change genres altogether, because our views are banana saw on these movies and differ wildly.
So now that we have discovered that Tamara loves Redline just as much as me, we are moving on to the Four Musketeers of Diversity.
Let me just say, car diversity, there, yes. Skinny, big-breasted women diversity, fully represented, yes. They're both there.
Oh.
100%.
Yeah, the racial diversity was just stereotypes. Didn't mention this when the guy was getting carjacked. It was by some Asian gangsters.
Asian guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Inception was played by Eddie
Griffin. Inception. Griffin, yeah.
Eddie Griffin, yeah. So he was the music mogul who's black.
Yeah.
And quintessentially black in his role.
Very stereotypical. Yeah. It was just, there was nothing politically correct about this movie or progressive about this movie at all.
There was a lot of the buxom beauties were also Asian, which is also kind of quintessentially stereotypical, because that tends to be like the car racing genre of the times was very Asian centric. Mm-hmm. So that was, that was that.
Not only were there no musketeers showing up to the round table, there was a fucking tumbleweed going across it and just like happening. It was a desert of diversity. So nothing. Now, Tamara, what were your genius grab bags?
So I was caught up between two. My left and a half was one that I felt strongly about, which is if this person just up and left the movie, it would be so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And my answer was everybody. If there was anybody less in this movie, the movie would have benefited from it, because there was way too many characters with way too many bit parts, and he was trying to do way too many things at one time, which just made it very confusing. So if they would have maybe just taken one or two people out of the equation, might have been a better movie.
Oh man, I would love to see a movie with Nat and Sally being badass mechanics and just like tearing things up.
Yeah, that would probably be like a 10 times better flick than this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, what was your second one?
My second one was the alternate movie title.
Ooh.
And I was going to call it, I don't know if you'll recognize this ditty, Vroom, 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 Let's Go Back to My Room So We Can Do It All Night and You Can Make Me Feel Right.
Yeah. That is amazing.
Thank you.
I cannot top you, but I will share Ready, Set, Room.
I did get the vroom 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 from the 38 vrooms that I saw in the outline. It's kind of like, you were my inspiration.
You're my inspiration. You run a fast car. I'll take it to get to anywhere. I wonder why this Tracy Chapman song wasn't in this movie. That's what I mean. It would have gotten 5 dry kisses if Tracy Chapman's song would have been in this movie. That's all.
I don't think it would have vibed with the movie. I hate to say that and, you know, like go against what you're saying, but.
Don't you remember when we were driving in your car, vrooming so fast it felt like we're drunk? Yeah.
Okay, go ahead and sing the rest of that about her working as a cash checkout girl and her daddy's sick and she has to take care of him, and then her boyfriend starts drinking, and then they're just not driving the fast car anymore. That maybe that's past the end.
No,
so we just don't see that.
You got the lyrics a little wrong. She's working as a mechanic and her daddy blew up in a car. Yes.
Oh, we're flipping. Yeah. I got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're making it fit to the you driving fast car. See?
Right.
Yeah, you have to paint the picture for me, Corinne.
Don't you remember when my daddy blew up in a car and I was working as a mechanic over far? Yes. See?
Got to workshop that a little bit.
What? I thought it was perfection. Okay, fine, fine. Grammy's not coming this time, but next week. Well, actually, next week, we are starting our break early because we're extending our break for a month to get our shit together. So, yes, 2 months and one Tuesday in May because dying relatives and, yeah.
Which means maybe we'll come back the last month in July.
Well, yeah.
We'll make it two months. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll make it 2 months. 2 months.
Last Tuesday in July, we'll come back. And yeah, I'm also going to be going on road trip with the parents, which is not going to be stressful at all. No, it's going to be totally fine for like a week. That's so relaxing. Vacation. Yeah. I need time to recover from
that. And I'm going to go find myself.
Ooh.
A new job. Finish that sentence.
I like that.
My 2 month hiatus is going to be solely rebuffing my portfolio because it needs so much work, as Christo from the future has let me know. And so that's what I'm going to be doing, and hopefully moving on to bigger and better things.
I don't know. Maybe we'll have a dry kiss retreat on a weekend. That might be nice. Yeah. Thank you, gentle listeners, for supporting us. Love doing this podcast with Tam and love having y'all as listeners.
I would have said I love doing this podcast with you too, but then you put this movie in the mix and now I'm not so sure.
I mean, it wasn't strategic at all that I suggested taking a break after this beautiful movie.
I know. I was like, wait, I get to pick one more to torture you, right? No, I think we need to take a break now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, let's do that.
Because I'm crumbling under the pressure of it all right now. Yeah, so.
Same.
I love that we can support each other in taking care of our mental health and our soul needs. And I will definitely miss recording, but also I'm going to be very appreciative for the break. So, yes.
Me too.
So, Tamara, what do we have coming up next week?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
And if you have anything that you would like to say to us about our podcast, Redline, or if you really want us to come back early, then you just like give us all the 5-star ratings and reviews and maybe that will happen. But
you not the 1-star. I see you out there. I see you. Our 1-star ratings have gotten bigger. You don't need to tell us how bad we suck. We already know.
If you don't like us, just
like
keep
pull
scrolling.
Us in the other direction.
Yeah.
Words of affirmation. We need words of affirmation.
Yeah,
we're crumbling here, people, in case you haven't heard.
You know what, though? Like, actually seeing people's reviews, when I look at them, it makes me happy. It adds a little light to my life.
Even the bad ones?
We have bad reviews.
No, I'm just saying that the singular star reviews.
Oh.
I look at those and like, I know what people say now. Like they're like all the good stuff and the glowing stuff and the bunch of people that are fans of yours. And then you got one bad one and you fixate on the bad one. That's me.
No, I just look at
the bad ones.
The beautiful written reviews that make my heart super happy and make me think, oh, I do really like this podcasting thing. I'm cheap. I will do it for praise. Thank you.
You are cheap. Yeah.
So if you have anything nice or whatever that you would like to say to us, you can reach out to us via email at onedrykiss@gmail.com or the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at onedrykiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, you see your finger, you see it right in front of you. It's that thing attached to your hand. And there is a button not too far from your finger where you can just boop. Rate and review us if you got the couple of seconds to do it.
Yay.
We greatly appreciate it.
Yes.
But in the meantime, we would like to thank you for stopping by and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. See you next time.
See you next time. Yay!
Swing low, sweet chariot.
Tamara's gonna give us the synopsis to the greatest movie of all time. As Carlo and Nat...
Stay with us, Corinne. Stay with us. We're almost done.
This guy's the worst actor. I'm not going to say that, but people will be able to read between the lines.